This is a place that could have and should have changed the world. I mean, this is where his wireless transmission tower stood, and not only could it have sent wireless energy worldwide and nationwide, but it had many other applications. But to sum it up, the bankers said, where do I put the meter? And Tesla said it's not supposed to have a meter. And, you know, a lot of other details happened, but the funding was pulled, and the world in many ways is more bitter and hollow ever since.
Hey, everybody. So, you'll have to excuse my voice. I lost it. I got a sore throat, and it's taking a while for it to come back. But I kind of fell down a small rabbit hole the other day, and I just find it highly fascinating to imagine what if. So, I thought I would do a quick video on this now while I'm thinking about it before I lose the train of my thought. Nikola Tesla is a pretty interesting guy, to say the least, but it always confused me how someone who seemed to work for at least some humanitarian causes at his core, things like free energy and talk of world peace, also supposedly spent the entire 20th century of his life building a death ray. I've heard of the death ray, I've heard about it over and over, but I never really looked into it. And I kind of fell down a small rabbit hole the other day and realized that the history on that is not, or what is generally believed. So I heard about Tesla's death ray years ago, and ever since I first learned about him, and people still bring it up all the time, that he was inventing this ultimate weapon. And upon his death in 1943, the government went in to both the rooms that he lived out his life on the 33rd floor of the New Yorker Hotel and confiscated all of his papers and his belongings. And men from the Navy also took over a storage unit he had.
There was one very interesting letter that stuck out, and that's this memo dated April 17th, 1950, which discusses a warehouse, a storage unit that Tesla had at the Manhattan Warehouse and Storage Company on 52nd Street and 7th Avenue in New York City. And they talked about how no one had had access to that storage unit except right after Tesla's death in early 1943, when an examination was made of his effects. Michael King, who was the floor supervisor of that warehouse floor where Tesla's stuff was kept for approximately 10 years, stated that at the time, numerous photographs were taken by examiners. His description of the equipment used would tend to show that a microfilm reproduction was made of some of the papers of the deceased scientist. Mr. King also added that several of the group making the examination wore U.S. Navy uniforms, and during the 2 days required to complete the examination, the civilian assistants in the group were identified to him only as, quote, federal authorities.
And it's known that the government classified some of those documents, and debates still go on today about what they classified and what they did with what they classified. But the idea that Tesla was over there working on a pew-pew Star Wars ray gun or Star Trek ray gun have been, in my view, exaggerated. Because if you actually go back and read the articles that came out at the time that Tesla made his quote-unquote death ray announcement back in 1934, that's not exactly what he said. So this was reported in newspapers all over the place, but the main one I see referenced a lot is from the July 11th, 1934 issue of the New York Times. Tesla at 78 bears new death beam, right? But then they say defensive weapon only. And if you go down in here and you actually read what he's proposing, it doesn't actually sound like a death ray. It says, when put in operation, Dr. Tesla said this latest invention of his would make war impossible. This death beam, he asserted, would surround each country like an invisible Chinese wall, only a million times more impenetrable. It would make every nation impregnable against attack by airplanes or by large invading armies. But while it will make every nation safe against any attack by a would-be invader, Dr. Tesla added, the death beam by its nature could not be employed similarly as a weapon for offense. For this death beam, he explained, could be generated only from large stationary and immovable power plants stationed in the manner of old-time forts at various strategic distances from each country's border. They could not be moved for the purposes of attack. And death ray sounds really good in headlines, so I'm sure I understand why the media ran with it. But a wall of energy does not sound the same to me as a ray or a beam. Some of the headlines did run with the fact that he was inventing these rays, plural, to stop wars as a curtain of death. This one says curtain of death will be placed around the borders of the country. But it's a force field. And it says here he declared he planned to give his secret to the Geneva Conference in the interest of peace. So he was not at all trying to build an offensive death ray war weapon. He's talking about an electronic or electric force field of particles, right? It's not the same. That's not the same as a death beam. I mean, I guess it is technically, but it's also not. Because when you say death ray, I'm going to go ahead and guess 9 times out of 10, most people's brains automatically think of like the pew-pew gun with like a beam of light coming out of it. That's just not what he was saying. So this is more like a force field, not a death ray. An energetic wall that stops entire squadrons of warplanes from even flying over a nation's border, just shuts them down, or renders tanks and battleships inoperable. So that does the opposite of what a death ray would do. This just stops war from being possible. And he was purposefully designing it in such a manner to make it impossible to turn it into an offensive weapon. In the configuration that Tesla described, nations would be protected from other nations from being invaded. And then war would simply cease to be possible, at least not in the ways that it's traditionally been fought, warplanes and tanks and battleships and stuff like that. Because if every nation on Earth had one of these, it would make it almost like a cartoon level silly to try and perpetrate war in the traditional way that it's been done with all of this hardware. And maybe that sounds like a totally crazy idea that could never work for a number of reasons. And there's going to be someone who comes into the comments and goes, actually, quantum physics, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. But, you know, at least somebody was trying to think in this way, because it's the way that I feel like it's the way scientists should be trying to think, right? What is a huge problem in our world? Freaking war. And yeah, maybe it's a crazy idea that could never work, that he was working on world peace, which even the phrase world peace just sounds like a crazy impossibility. But maybe it takes an impossible idea from an impossible mind to solve our so-called impossible problems. Then I found out that Tesla wasn't the only person working on this back in the mid-1930s. So the following year, he makes his announcement in 1934. The following year, in 1935, I found this article having to do with Professor Jacques Bremond, a radiologist out of the University of Paris, who revealed an invisible death ray that he used to kill a mouse instantly from a distance of 30 feet. However, he said this invention was cost prohibitive, as the contraption cost $2,000 to kill a single mouse, so scaling it up would be exorbitant. Even for the drunken extravagance of war, it would cost too much. He goes on to say, the death ray, which would be fatal to a man, is still no more than a bad dream, not likely to be realized, if at all, for many years. But this professor says if he were to discover it, he thinks he would throw the formula into the sea. Curiously, though, he then goes on to say that he's skeptical even of the reports that German scientists have developed a beam which stops the motors of airplanes miles away. So there you have scientists in at least 3 major Western countries working on this kind of tech by the mid-1930s. So I have to add this in because I came across this as I was editing. It got to the point where they were doing full-page spreads about trying to calm people down in 1935, that death rays were not scientifically possible. It came out that Marconi made an announcement that he was working with experiments with a secret ray, which he believes will enable him to stop airplane motors. But further proving my point about Tesla not making such a ray, specifically in this same article, they interviewed Tesla about this claim. Turning to Marconi's claim, Dr. Tesla said such a ray would be difficult to operate effectively and that protection against such a ray would be easily contrived. Now, the transmission of such rays is greatly handicapped by the small amount of energy available. Assuming that a plane is 6 miles distant, the ray to reach it would cover an area of 1 billion square centimeters, so that energy per centimeter available for interference is very trifling. However, if it were true that a ray of sufficient power could be sent such a distance, a remedy could easily be devised making the ray harmless. And what would the remedy be, he was asked. An efficient copper screening, not of the whole motor, but of vulnerable parts. It would also be easy to change to ignition systems of different principles, he added. Diesel motors would be another remedy. So clearly whatever Tesla was working on was not this type of ray. It was something else. Because here he is in August of 1935, a year after he made his announcement, debunking Marconi's announcement of having experimented with a secret ray to stop motors. And that's only what I was able to find. I'm sure if I dig into that, just that, even further, I will probably find more. I think the point is proven, however, that that is clearly something that they were all working on. I mean, every time one nation or scientists in a nation announce they're working on some type of technology, competing countries also begin racing to develop the same thing. I mean, that's just the way it's been done for a very long time. So Tesla's announcement to the press in 1934 surely would have set off such a chain reaction with that tech if it wasn't going on already by that point. And keep in mind, this is only a few years before Nazi Germany invaded Poland and World War II kicked off. Nikola Tesla was hit by a car while crossing the street in 1937, and he passed away in 1943 before World War II ended. And whatever was going on, it's pretty clear that humanity did not end up utilizing an energy force field peace weapon to end World War II or end all wars. Instead, we ended up with the atomic bomb in 1945, a weapon that would ensure war could never end. I mean, even today, we are living under the threat of nuclear war and potential nuclear war with nations like Russia and Iran are always getting mentioned in our press and justifying all kinds of militarization and defense spending as I speak. People are now saying we're closer to World War III than ever. So sadly, we did not end up with a peace weapon. We ended up with an endless war weapon that also justifies or attempted to be used to justify world government. That's what we ended up with. After Tesla died, the U.S. even started a heavily funded top-secret military operation called Project Nick in 1945 in an attempt to build a death ray. But we're told that supposedly nothing ever came out of that. Details of these experiments were never published to this day, and stories like the Philadelphia experiment are connected to that, which have officially been chalked up to just more conspiracy theory. But by 1958, DARPA was working on a top-secret project called Seesaw at Lawrence Livermore Lab to develop charged particle beam weapons. And at this point, we know the military has laser weapons, so that's all on record.
It works just like a laser pointer. There's a chamber inside with special materials that release photons.
But still to this day, we don't have a nationwide force field energetic wall that stops war. Fancy that. I don't know, as someone born in the last part of the 20th century, I can say that it's really hard for me to even imagine a world where the powers that be would allow there to be some kind of peace weapon that makes war no longer physically possible, that that would even be allowed to be developed and made known to anybody. I mean, considering the way that World War II and the ensuing Cold War and eventually wars on terror have been used to change world order in the 80 years since. It would seem any such technology that would stop war from being able to be physically fought would have definitely been suppressed. I mean, look at how much stuff they were able to justify just during the Cold War with the threat of the bomb.
The Chemical Corps is testing psychochemical agents that temporarily change human behavior patterns. When exposed to an extremely small amount of the agent, the cat's personality completely changed. Tests now in progress indicate that such agents have significant military potential.
While everyone's ducking and covering, they're doing all kinds of insane amounts of unethical experimentation just all over the place for decades. And they never would have been able to do that if they didn't have the bomb and the threat of the bomb to justify it. Not to mention how much of our modern economies are based on so-called defense. I mean, we're talking trillions and trillions of dollars. And trillions is definitely a national security issue, quote unquote, that would ensure anything like a peace ray or whatever, a force field like the kind that we're talking about, would never be able to see the light of day. I mean, it would take a fundamental shift in humanity altogether, from our consciousness out to our societies, to make any real changes in that regard. Too much of our world is based on war and the threat of war. So Nikola Tesla was working on a force field. Even today, I still see people talking about his death ray, and they do make it sound like this pew-pew Star Trek weapon.
He was working on a machine to create a powerful electrical death beam, which could wipe out armies in a flash.
And many times to do that, they cite a letter to the editor of the New York Times that he wrote in 1908 to show that he spent the whole 20th century working on this death ray. And yet when I went to read the original, I noticed that there's a key word in there that's not quoted correctly. And he might have meant the word they're quoting, but it's not what it says. It's kind of weird. And they always say it's on page 5 of the April 21st, 1908 edition of the New York Times. But actually, I found it on page 8. So I think that's kind of weird in the archive. But this letter is insane to me. If he believed even a little bit of what he's saying in this letter, that just would change everything that we know about reality altogether, if even a little bit of this was true. So I want to go ahead and read this to you. Everywhere I see this quoted, when I spoke of future warfare, I meant that it would be conducted by direct application of electrical waves without the use of aerial engines or other implements of destruction. I mean, I guess he could have been saying warfare there, but the original printing of this and every other place I've seen it printed from 1908 says welfare. He says future welfare. So I don't know. But listen to this letter. He says, from a report of your issue of March 11th, which escaped my attention, I noticed some remarks I made on the occasion referred to have been misunderstood. Allow me to make a correction. When I spoke of future welfare, I meant that it would be conducted by direct application of electrical waves without the use of aerial engines or other implements of destruction. This means, as I pointed out, would be ideal, for not only would the energy of war require no effort for the maintenance of its potentiality, but it would be productive in times of peace. This is not a dream. Even now, wireless power plants could be constructed by which any region of the globe might be rendered uninhabitable without subjecting the population of other parts to serious danger or inconvenience. What I said in regard to the greatest achievement of the man of science, whose mind is bent upon the mastery of the physical universe, was nothing more than what I stated in one of my unpublished addresses, from which I quote, according to an adopted theory, every ponderable atom is differentiated from a tenuous fluid filling all space merely by spinning motion, as a whirl of water in a calm lake. By being set in movement, this fluid, the ether, becomes gross matter. Its movement arrested, the primary substance reverts to its normal state. And I think that's interesting too, because the word ether was removed from the scientific vernacular at the beginning of the 20th century. And we don't really have a word to describe that idea now anymore. Anyway, he continues, it appears then possible for man through harnessed energy of the medium and suitable agencies for starting and stopping ether whirls to cause matter to form and disappear. At his command, almost without effort on his part, old worlds would vanish and new ones would spring into being. He could alter the size of this planet, control its seasons, adjust its distance from the sun, guide it on its eternal journey along any path he might choose through the depths of the universe. He could make planets collide and produce his suns and stars, his heat and light. He could originate life in all its infinite forms. To cause at will the birth and death of matter would be man's grandest deed, which would give him the mastery of physical creation, make him fulfill his ultimate destiny. Nothing could be further from my thought than to call wireless telephony around the world the greatest achievement of humanity, as reported. This is a feat which, however stupefying, can be readily performed by any expert. I have myself constructed a plant for this very purpose. The wireless wonders are only seeming, not results of exceptional skill as popularly believed. The truth is, the electrician has been put in possession of a veritable lamp of Aladdin. All he has to do is rub it. Now to rub the lamp of Aladdin is no achievement. If you're desirous of hastening the accomplishment of still greater and further reaching wonders, you can do no better than by emphatically opposing any measure tending to interfere with the free commercial exploitation of water power and the wireless art. So absolutely does human progress depend on the development of these that the smallest impediment, particularly through the legislative bodies of this country, may set back civilization and the cause of peace for centuries. Nikola Tesla, New York, April 19, 1908. So Tesla's free energy ideas were defunded by people like J.P. Morgan, who supposedly wasn't interested unless he could find a place to put a meter on it, you know, to charge people. And certainly any ideas that would literally, physically stop modern warfare from being able to be effectively fought would get shut down by similar powerful interests. But what happened to the things that he was working on? Where did this technology really go? When we first got together, Aaron showed me a 2004 PBS documentary about Tesla called Tesla, Master of Lightning.
His name was Nikola Tesla, and he was the Master of Lightning.
And in the last part, they start talking about HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program up in Alaska.
The HARP project evolved from a patent filed in 1987. In which Tesla's work is referenced. It proposed using the ionosphere like an enormous electrical circuit to transmit power around the planet.
And there's a guy on there who says that, it can't be used to control the weather, ha ha ha.
Tesla proposed that it might be possible to modify the weather by using radio waves. I believe that this is impossible.
Well, back in 2014, we did a report on the fact that you had David Walker, Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Science, Technology, and Engineering, testifying at an appropriations subcommittee hearing where he just very matter-of-factly states that the Air Force took over from the Navy and that they are managing the ionosphere, which is what HARP was really designed to do.
I wanted to ask a couple questions here about HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. Several of you at the table have a little bit of a piece here. As you know, this is located up in Alaska. It's currently funded by the Air Force Research Lab. It was formerly funded by the Office of Naval Research. One of the prime customers is DARPA.
Thank you, Senator. The Air Force has gotten great value out of HARP in the past. We took over from the Navy and managed it and actually did a number of experiment campaigns up there and have finished our work that we're interested in doing up there. We've moving on to other ways of managing the ionosphere, which the HARP was really designed to do, was to inject energy into the ionosphere, be able to actually control it.
And he just said it just like that. And it's just weird because after years of claims that it couldn't be used that way and that anyone who said that otherwise was a crazy conspiracy theorist, there you go. They're just straight admitting it.
Microwave technology has already made it possible to transmit wireless power with the use of satellites.
Which leads me to wonder about the other claims in the documentary, because right after that part, you have this claim about what can be done with energy and satellites.
You have to create a pipeline. That's very expensive. So we said, all right, let's go into Alaska, create microwaves from the natural gas, send them to a satellite at a particular geosynchronous orbit, put a reflector there and send it to Japan. And in Japan now, you get the antenna, which transforms these microwaves into 60 hertz, and you get electricity.
And we know that there are modern Tesla Tower experiments going on, like the one that's been built in recent years just south of Dallas, which we covered a few years back.
Mel's just really good at that. She came across a Reddit conspiracy forum, people talking about this Milford Tower, and some of them were saying it looked like a Tesla Tower. Other people were saying, no, that's a Texas oil drilling well, and they just have a strange cover on it to kind of take attention away from it. Well, that seems strange since it completely draws attention to it. It made us pull over off the side of the road. Other people had to be wondering what it is, too. And then Mel found the company that was operating the tower called Visiv Technologies, and then it became apparent by looking on their pages that this was a very interesting piece of high technology.
So you had multiple countries working on energy beam and particle beam technologies back in the 1930s. That's almost 100 years ago now, and that's on record.
And even today, after decades of investment and research, scientists still disagree on whether beam weapons are realistic.
That's all I'm really at liberty to say, is that a considerable amount of effort has taken place in the United States and in a number of other countries trying to get these things up to a real weaponizable status. Let me stop at that point.
It's been almost a century, and here we are, we're still living in this paradigm of war for oil and energy scarcity, and claims that climate change requires all this huge increase in rare earth mineral mining and changing our behaviors and how we live and transportation and what we eat and all this stuff. And you know, energy is just used time and time and time again to shape and control society and all of us living in it. But is it the reality? Or just the one we're being artificially held in? And I think that's a fair question to ask. I don't think that's crazy to ask that when you think about the fact that some people who were considered geniuses were working on this well over 100 years ago. But then my mind automatically flips around to, well, ever since especially the turn of the 21st century and 9/11, we've been living in a more and more dystopic society, which is based on increasingly more and more control and results in less and less trust in our institutions, in our governments. This letter to the editor from 1908, is there any corporation or government or international body or anybody that you could think of that you would want to give that kind of power to? I mean, especially now we live in a post-COVID era, so that was an extremely high control situation where lots of boundaries of power were way overstepped in ways that are just egregious. And so trust from society into our institutions and even a lot of our scientific institutions took a huge nosedive. It's not a time for unleashing godlike or demigodlike powers at all. I mean, this over here that he's talking about in 1908 sounds like a recipe for an absolute nightmare. I can't think of anybody who should be wielding that kind of power. That's insane. So it isn't hard to imagine that maybe Tesla realized that the power, the gravity of what he had discovered and was just too much. Maybe he came to the conclusion that there's just not a single institution on Earth that should ever get their hands on it, because it could easily destroy humanity altogether, or at the very least be used to hold the world hostage. There are people who talk about and write about, and I've seen some very convincing information having to do with secret science programs, secret space programs, breakaway civilization stuff that's going on. There are closed cities that we have, even in this country, we have closed cities that no one comes in or out of there. We don't know what's going on in there. There's underground facilities. We don't know what's going on in there. I mean, who knows? And then there's another take that says they're bluffing and that they don't have all this crazy stuff. And it's just this huge PR campaign bluff to make it seem like they have a bunch of crazy stuff they don't really have. I don't know where I lie on that spectrum. I've seen some pretty interesting, but I don't know. I wonder all the time because I don't think we've left the need to know basis that we started going under, at least since World War II. I don't think we're told things a lot of the time. I know, like I said in a previous video, we live in a world where patents are put under secrecy orders if they threaten, quote, national security, and that can mean all kinds of things. And in some cases in the past, it has come out that some of the things that they were putting under secrecy orders would have improved energy efficiency by leaps and bounds at a time when they didn't want to. They were putting secrecy orders on highly efficient solar panels. So at a time when there was an energy crisis. So they've done it before. And it leads to further questions about this stuff. But whatever Tesla was working on, maybe he decided it was too dangerous for people to have. You know, one more thing I wanted to add. It's interesting that the government had hired an MIT expert on high voltage physics to spend a few days going through Tesla's papers after he died to try to determine if the death ray was possible. And based on what was there for him to read, he supposedly determined that it was all mostly philosophical and speculative, and that Tesla was just doing a lot of it to promote himself as a scientist, but that there were no real sound, workable principles or methods in his papers, which the government obviously agreed with him. And that is why they turned right around and launched a heavily funded top secret military project to create a death ray. But word also came out that Tesla had left behind one more package in a vault at a hotel a couple blocks away from the New Yorker where he had previously lived, which supposedly contained a prototype of his death ray. So the MIT physicists went there, and inside the vault, they found a small cabinet covered in brown paper. And the hotel manager reportedly handed this physicist a note written by Tesla claiming that not only was there a prototype inside that was worth $10,000, but that it was booby-trapped, rigged to detonate if the parcel was opened incorrectly. So everyone else ran out of the room because they didn't know if this thing was going to blow up. And the physicist tore the paper off, and inside he found a Wheatstone bridge, an old-timey electrical circuit used to measure an unknown electrical resistance. I think most people would agree Nikola Tesla was a pretty smart guy. So what message do you think he left behind in this seeming practical joke? History, by the way, claims that the papers on Tesla's death beam were never found.
This guy did change the world. Unfortunately, a lot of what he did was weaponized.
Maybe it's not too late, though.